You're listening to the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 25 for Saturday, February 18th, 2012. Mountain Goat. Sorry about the confusion on the earlier episode. That was actually supposed to be number 24, and I claimed it was 25. This is the real 25. So, well, the big news this week obviously has been Apple out of the blue announcing the next operating system version for OS X, or actually OS 10, as I'm supposed to call it. There were no signs that this is on the horizon. They just, well, there were some rumors that there would be a strange event in February and not an actual announcement. And so, well, strange it was. Suddenly, the Twitterverse was buzzing with people commenting on who's been share-locked, like, for example, the new notification center. People say, well, that share-locks growl. Just to explain what share-locking means, that actually means Apple taking some technology that a third party made great and widely used and included in the operating system. And there are two explanations why this is called share-lock. One that I found, you can share-lock somebody. That means you are besting him in an intellectual fight, basically. And the second explanation that's more widely used in the context of Apple is there was once a tool called ShareLock, which is sort of a predecessor of Spotlight, such that it's basically searching for something, I think. Or was that some error reporting? No, I think it was Spotlight. And, well, Apple, as you know, has included Spotlight now in the operating system. And that made basically this extra software that they very shortly before releasing it as part of the operating system actually won some sort of award by Apple. So that was share-locked, and that's where this term comes from. And obviously there's a couple of other things that are now part of Mountain... I keep saying Mountain Goat, Mountain Lion, that we were desperately wishing for. Like, for example, some sort of notes that would synchronize with the notes on our iPhones, as well as reminders. Currently, I don't use iCloud for all of this. I have my IMAP server, and their notes are basically emails, and reminders are basically calendar items. And with these two apps, I will finally get these out of mail and calendar and have them in proper apps. So, well, we're going to visit Mountain Lion a little bit later on. Let's first talk about the other news. Aimed at beginners, Apple posted a quick start guide titled Start Developing iOS Apps Today. The link is in the show notes. It's very nicely made. You have sort of a horizontal stream with some stations there. The first few are download Xcode, get started with an app, and so on and so forth. I think it's a nice overview for somebody getting into developing for iOS, so you should definitely check that out. Do you remember the cached files cleaning debacle? As a short-term fix, Apple had introduced an extended file attribute to mark files that should not be backed up. If you are making use of that, you should definitely also look at the iOS 5.1 release notes. There might be something in there changing that you should consider in keeping when you want to make your app compatible for future versions of the operating system. So I'm not saying what, because it's still under NDA, but there's a change coming and you should probably have a kind of dual approach using the external file attribute, which is in the operating system since 5.0.1, and also this new thing that's coming there. Michael Ash, who is well known for his Friday Q&A covering advanced topics in depth, he recently published his column in book form. So it's a collection of all his Friday Q&As in one handy book. When I tried to purchase that, I wanted to get it on the iBook store, but it turned out it was not available there. So I emailed him, and it turns out they only published it originally in the United States. He responded to my email after a while that his publishing team found what the problem was and resubmitted the book. So now it should be available internationally at the time of us recording this podcast. Russell Ivanov of Shifty Jelly had a good response to a user complaining that he had to buy their app twice, once for iPhone and once for iPad. Let me read that to you. I found that really hilarious. Hi, it's $1.99. Even if you did buy it twice, we still don't have enough for lunch. At $4, we get $2.54 after Apple and the government have taken their share, even less if you factor in a corporate tax of 30%. I bought a coffee today. It cost me $3.50. It powered my work for over 2 hours. Curious to know how you think they'd react if I were there tomorrow and asked for a free refill. What I'm getting at is that we build an iPhone version, we don't hit copy and paste, and an iPad one comes out magically. We spend months on this stuff. And frankly, if you don't think it's worth $2, then I should go home and start crying right about now. As three guys who do this full time, we rely on people buying our app. I won't lie to you. Your email makes me angry and sad all at the same time. What has the world come to where a developer can spend 3 to 12 months working on an app and a customer questions having to pay $1.99 for it? For the $800 iPhone, after having bought it for the $579 plus iPad? Sad smiley, Russell. Yeah, well, Russell really puts your finger on it. People spend hundreds of dollars on Apple hardware, not really complaining about that anymore, because if they do, they don't, because then they buy something cheaper like Android or Windows phones, and they still complain about these single digit dollar amounts. Well, actually it's three digits because you have the cents as well, but well, really? Next item. Associated references. You might have heard that before. That's something where, because of the dynamic nature of the Objective-C runtime, you can add methods and variables sort of to live objects. So if some object is already created in memory and it didn't have an instance variable, with an associated reference, you can add that. I have to admit, I've never used these before. They look really awesome. So you could make a category for something and just add some internal instance variables that you want to use. I've linked the tutorial for that in the show notes. Speaking about my own projects, there's two items that I would like to point out specifically. In the previous week, I added DTZip archive to DT Foundation, my open source project on GitHub, where I'm trying to, over time, put in everything that I basically use all the time. So standardizing certain items, like, for example, getting the documents and caches paths. And for example, in this case now, dealing with zipped files. What I did with this DTZip archive is actually make something that can deal with both gzip and pkzip at the same time. The other wrappers that you find often can only deal with either one. But I figured, well, I want to be able to open a file and get at the contents regardless of which scheme it uses. To just clarify a bit, gzip is basically the Unix variant of just deflating a file, and it's just a single file. So you have one file and you deflate it, and you can see that it's deflated by the extension .gz. That wasn't good enough for pkzip, who wanted to actually have multiple files in one zip file. So they basically took the gzip algorithm and put some directory structure into it. So a winzip or pkzip file is actually a bunch of gzip files plus an index. And there's an open source library that's also included in the operating system by the name of libz or zlib, depending how you want to put it. And what it does is it gives you this support for gzip files. Now, if you want to unzip winzip files or pkzip files, then there's a wrapper available that basically most of the Objective-C zip file wrappers use. It's called minizip. And again, it's basically C code that uses zlib, but understands this directory structure, and so it can get to the individual files. Now, one problem that I found with the general handling of zip files was that timestamps in the standard format don't have any time zone. So there is a DOS date field in the gzip header, which is standard, but unfortunately this doesn't have a time zone. So if you compress something, say at 12 o'clock in somewhere in America, and then you open the same file in Europe, because of the time zone, it would assume that it's now 12 o'clock in the Europe time zone. There are some extensions in the header, which more or less differ between all the people who are making such tools. One actually seems to hold a Unix timestamp. Unix timestamps are basically a number of seconds since the 1st January 1970. But I have to investigate what this is about, how to get the file date reliably. But then again, for the most part, we don't care about file dates anyway. We just want to get the contents of the files. For example, if they are sales reports that we're downloading that are zipped or gzipped, then we want to get the report numbers. And we don't really care about when the file was last modified. Second item that I want to mention of my open source works, speaking about sales reports, I was recreating the auto ingest Java utility that Apple provides in Objective-C. I named it DTITC Report Downloader, and I updated that now so that if you call that on the command line, you can now also pass all as a date. And what it will do is it will download all the available sales reports, or actually it's daily or weekly reports for that are available. So it's like 13 or so weeks or 14 days back that you can get these reports. So if you want to build your own downloading tool with this auto ingest in Objective-C, you can do that. Link is in the show notes. Now, the real news, the real big news this week, let's get back to that, is actually for us developer, at least, that Xcode 4.3 is finally out. So I'm not talking about Mountain Goat, which is sometimes in summer, but actually we got a new version of our favorite, double quotes, development tool. It's finally out of beta, and they changed it around quite a bit. Previously, Xcode was installed in a slash developer folder, but with Xcode 4.3, they changed this packaging such that now you have just an Xcode app bundle, and the developer tools that it needs or comes bundled with are contained inside this app bundle. What this means is actually you no longer have an installer on the Mac App Store like you had previously, but you have the full app. And a big advantage of that is obviously that now they can do incremental updates. So hopefully that marks the end of gigabyte size downloads. And if it becomes that much easier to ship updates, maybe we see the 4.3 point releases like 4.3.1, 4.3.2 and so on much more frequent, and hopefully fixing some of the annoyances, let's put it like that, that are still present. Like one thing that I see quite often that I'm getting annoyed with is if you use a Git repository with Xcode, sometimes it kind of gets stuck or so internally, and then every change that you make, you get a pop-up, a crash occurred, do you want to allow that? And then I always have to hit twice, no, don't crash, no, don't crash, and then I can write another word. So that's something that I hope they fix soon. Actually, I don't quite know. It might have been already fixed in 4.3 because I only put 4.3 on my MacBook Air for at home and experimenting, and I didn't yet find time to actually replace the Xcode 4.2 on my main development machine, which is a big iMac. Okay, some highlights from Xcode 4.3 are, I already alluded to that, the Xcode 4.3 toolset is repackaged as a single app. Complementary tools launch from within Xcode. You still have the option, if you like, to put things like instruments on the dock, but generally they are now contained within Xcode. Command line tools are now optional. So if you need these to compile, or there are some other tools like, for example, genstrings, bracket, for which I already have written genstrings 2 as a replacement as well, open source, close bracket. Well, command line tools are now optional, so if you want these, you can install them from the downloads section in the Xcode 4.3 preferences. Slash developer no longer exists, so somebody mentioned on Twitter he now can put all the supplemental developer tools that he uses into slash developer. It's no longer necessary. And when you start Xcode 4.3, it actually asks you whether you want to remove that, if you want to move it to the trash. You are free to not remove it, and Xcode 4.3 and Xcode 4.2 can coexist on the same system. So if you are a bit shy about kind of jumping on the bandwagon for 4.3, can still keep 4.2 in slash developer and kind of peek into 4.3 when you have a bit time and don't have any deadline stress for your apps. And the final highlight that's mentioned in Apple documents is auto layout is now the default for all new Cocoa projects. What this means is you have to bear in mind auto layout is something that only exists in iOS since iOS 5. So if this is indeed true and auto layout is enabled, is a checkbox in interface builder, then that would force your XIP files to only run on iOS 5 and higher. So if you don't want that, you need probably to uncheck that intentionally. Huh? So once you open this new Xcode, you get a nice dialog where it tells you you have the option to remove older Xcode tools. In my case, it told me I've got Xcode 4.2.1 installed in slash developer, button move to trash. I didn't. And install Xcode 4.2.1 in slash application slash install Xcode.app. That was the old installer that you got if you downloaded the app from the Mac App Store. That's no longer necessary as well because Xcode is now, its own self-contained app. One big advantage of that I didn't mention so far is since it's all contained in the Xcode app bundle, you can basically install Xcode on other machines over the network. So what you do is you just activate file sharing for the other computer that you want to install it on, and then you log in with the user you have on this other machine. So you see the Macintosh hard disk in Finder, and then you can just drag this on the slash applications from your machine where you already installed it. And that works. I tested that. Very nice way of getting Xcode installed everywhere because it's over 3 gigabytes, so you don't really want to download that on all your machines. And if you have a gigabit LAN, it's only a couple of minutes to copy it. So that's another bonus we get with Xcode 4.3. One more thing that's a bit of an obscure item. It mentions, I think in the release notes, that LLDB is now the recommended debugger over GDB for an iOS project. You might not even have known what kind of debugger you're using. GDB was the default so far. You would only know that if you stopped on a breakpoint and then you have the console where it says round bracket GDB, round bracket closed, that would tell you you're using GDB. For some reason, I don't know what that really is, Apple recommends the LLDB now, which is basically their own debugger to go with LLVM. I asked for people's opinion about what they liked most in the new Xcode. One useful response, besides of, oh, it still crashes, was the round trip time to debugging in the SIM and the devices is much, much faster. So that's a good thing. That makes coding faster for us if we are debugging there. One item, though, that they seem to have destroyed with the update is if you had your iPhone locked, previously it would tell you you have to unlock it and then try again, and now it just doesn't do anything. So that's not ideal. Well, if you use your main iPhone for development and you have a pin lock, passcode lock, then you should remember to disable that during the day. or kind of unlock the device in worst case, best case, there are some really nice options for passcode lock to specify that you that it only should ask you for a code if it's like a couple of hours or so. So that may be what you want to use. Set it to say half an hour or 1 hour, then you can debug and don't have to enter your passcode every time. All right, that's it for some development. Let me just check. Yeah, last item for today. Let's dive into Mountain Lion. So the next version of OS 10 will be called Mountain Lion. Somebody did a comparison of the logo of Mountain Lion with this classical photo of Steve Jobs that you have on the biography, and somehow it seems like they both have the same expression on their face. So it's kind of really, really cool if you look for that. So we could think of it like this. Mountain Lion is sort of the tribute edition of OS X for Steve Jobs. And the basic gist of Mountain Lion is iCloud. So everything that's in iCloud, and Steve Jobs told us before he died in summer that they are pushing big into iCloud, and all the things that we were hoping for to get in Lion but didn't, now we get them in Mountain Lion. So yeah, that will come in summer. Summer means probably, if previous experiences are an indication, that sort of the final will be announced at WWDC 2012, and probably will be available then either right away or within a couple of weeks. Probably what we also get is a Gold Master. I'm looking forward to that. Judging from the specs, it seems that most Macs that are mid-2007 or later will be able to run it. It's no longer just that you need a 64-bit capable CPU, but there seems to be an arbitrary cutoff for even later CPUs. I've heard of some 2008 devices that also can't run Mountain Lion. So there's a support document that I link to in the show notes. Check out if your machines can run that. About new features, I like to quote something that Apple keeps shoving into our faces when it comes to this NDA. It's a reminder about Apple confidential information. Pre-release software is Apple confidential information. Your unauthorized distribution of pre-release software or disclosure of information related to pre-release software, including the posting of screenshots, may subject you both civil and criminal liability and result in immediate termination of your membership. So that's why I'm not going to discuss anything that's secret. But there are some items that are already public knowledge, so we can discuss them. So one of the items that piqued my interest was one of the developer evangelists, Michael Jurowicz, posted a tweet, some detailed info on new Objective-C syntax, with a link into the Apple Developer Forum. So with this tweet, it became common knowledge that there is new Objective-C syntax. Meaning, our favorite programming languages is getting some new bells and whistles. Let's put it like that. If you want to know which these are, and generally seasoned developers are really, really happy that these additions are coming. Just look them up on the link that's on the developer forum. Obviously, you need to be a registered developer to be able to see what this is about. GigaOM also summarized a couple of items what 10.8 means for developers. Actually, the title is a bit more than actually there is in there, but the gist is you get iCloud more deeply integrated with the operating system. You get Game Center, so there are like 25% of titles on the Mac App Store are games, and Game Center will basically allow you to keep your stats regardless of which platform you got them on. So you have Game Center on iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, Mac, maybe someday even on Apple TV. So like one of the achievements could be in some iOS 6 Apple TV that you watched all the episodes of your favorite TV show. One thing that's quite interesting is Apple's really pushing for the sandboxing now. We always thought that sandboxing will be a late addition to Lion, but it now seems that they have kind of put that off. Maybe Lion will get sandboxing or sandboxed apps via the Mac App Store, but basically, the idea is that in Mountain Lion, you can only run signed apps. So signed means it doesn't mean what some people say or think, that the app necessarily is encrypted. Signed only means that there's a digital certificate that contains a signed hash of the app binary that proves that the app binary was not modified, for one. And the other thing, it proves where it came from. So traditionally on the Mac App Store or even the iOS App Store, this signature would prove that Apple basically signed this digital certificate. And on iOS apps, it also meant that they were encrypted. Now, with this new gatekeeper feature in Mountain Lion, the default setting is to allow apps from the Mac App Store, but also apps that are digitally signed. Now, digitally signed in this case means that you can sign up for a free account with Apple, and you will then be able to sign your apps that you distribute outside of the Mac App Store. And so if somebody runs Mountain Lion and he gets your app via your website, because you are not selling it on the Mac App Store, but sell it via Digital River or some other service, then you basically can prove to the user that Apple knows who you are. So if your app turns into malware or does something nasty, then Apple can basically disable your app worldwide, sort of a kill switch. They just need to revoke your certificate. The third option in Gatekeeper obviously is to run unsigned code or run everything, but generally, probably most people will keep it at this default middle setting, which is actually rather smart, because well, everything on the Mac App Store is already signed and it kind of has the seal of approval of Apple. Everything that people take care of getting a digital signature on is also sort of kind of okay, because worst case, Apple can turn it off and disable the app if it does something nasty. And well, it also makes it much more difficult to get any sort of malware running, because if there's a virus or something, it definitely won't have a digital signature, at least not one that basically can be traced back to the developer or to Apple. So well, that makes the platform much more secure in one swoop. So there are many things that moved from iOS into Mountain Lion: iCloud, Game Center, Twitter sharing. One developer thinks that Apple should allow us to distribute signed apps outside the Mac, not the Mac, the iOS App Store as well. He asked that you dupe his radar, I link to it. But well, I don't think that this has many chances, because iOS is kind of a different beast than Mac. On the Mac, there always was a non-App Store model of distributing apps, and many people, especially of the likes of Adobe and other high-priced apps, don't want to go via the Mac App Store. But on iOS, the App Store was the only ever way to get apps. So people are used to having this as the only source. Well, and in a way, you already can run any signed app on any device, provided that you have a provisioning profile for this device. So I don't think it's a very high priority for Apple to give people other ways to distribute apps outside of the App Store. And if you are a large enterprise, you can sign your apps already in a way that they are independent from provisioning profiles. So if you have an enterprise distribution plan with Apple, which is a special kind of account, then the apps that you sign can run on any device. But obviously Apple doesn't tell you that. They just say you are not only supposed to run it on your company's devices, but in reality it would run on any device. So this kind of thing that you can run something that's digitally signed that doesn't come from the Mac App Store already exists for enterprises, and probably Apple doesn't have much interest in changing that. But well, if maybe they can be convinced if sufficient amounts of people dupe this radar and also want that, might be interesting to see. If you want to try out Mountain Lion but don't have a physical machine to put it on, virtual ones are always an option. But a word of warning: people tried it on Parallels and VMware, and the results are not pretty. Especially if you install the VMware tools, you start getting kernel panics after the next reboot. And without the tools, you're limited to a very low resolution and generally bad user experience. Fortunately for us, there is already a guide how to modify the VMware tools so that they don't cause a kernel panic. Link to that is on the show notes. Basically, you have to disable two kext that caused this problem, and then you should be fine for the most part. I haven't seen such a guide yet for Parallels. So good luck trying out Mountain Lion. I'm not going to put it on any of my machines just yet. I just don't have the time. Maybe once we get a developer preview 2 or so, that fixes the most problematic items, I might be tempted to put it on my MacBook Air. And probably when traveling to WWDC 2012, I already have it on my MacBook Air then. But, well, one thing is interesting to me. Previously, I thought Apple wanted to have a two-year release cycle with major operating systems. If you remember, Lion just really came out in fall 2011, and now we already get a new operating system. There was one hint to what the reason for this was, that Apple was pulling away resources from OS X. Sorry, I'm not supposed to call it OS X, OS X. To finish up iOS 5, which was also quite delayed, because originally it probably was intended to finish iOS 5, which is basically the iCloudified version of iOS, in summer. That got delayed to fall, and all the people working on this couldn't work on the operating system. So that's why now that apparently Apple has been hiring like crazy, they have more manpower to be able to have an annual release cycle for both operating systems. So that will become really interesting. If you compare that to Microsoft, who are always kind of announcing something and then it's wait. Apple is really kind of taking out all the stops, and the battle is on for dominance of the smartphone and desktop worlds. As a final item, I saved it for last. There's actually an interesting story of how somebody solved the problem for himself and then got approached by Apple to actually make use of what he built. And I'm talking about Kenneth Reitz and his article Xcode, GCC and Homebrew. Several months ago, I got fed up with having to download Xcode to build my software. I took the Xcode installer, ripped out all the parts I didn't need, and made a nice installer for GCC. It ended up being about 200 megabytes in size. It took 2 minutes to download. OS X-GCC-installer was born. Perfect. Unfortunately, I couldn't include the 10.6.7 SDKs due to licensing restrictions. These SDKs include Core Audio, Core Data, OpenGL, and more. Most software that isn't built specifically for OS X would build perfectly. Unfortunately, some software needed added some needless system dependencies, though. I'm looking at you, Node. I stuck it up on GitHub, and much to my delight, it became a pretty big hit. It solved a lot of headaches for a lot of people. Today, the project has 1,319 watchers on GitHub and has been downloaded 33,200 times. That's 8.3 terabytes of transfer. Thanks, GitHub, for the generous hosting. Homebrew did their best to support the project, but the official stance was, if you buy a Mac, you buy the whole package, pointing everyone to install full Xcode if they had any problems. Far from ideal, but I was content. Apple's interest. Meanwhile, Apple reached out to me to discuss some details about OS X GCC installer. They took an interest in shipping something official, but they weren't sure of the proper approach to take to support projects like Homebrew. I hopped on the phone, explained the specific needs of Homebrew, the restrictions with the proprietary headers and licensing, and what the ideal situation would be. Months passed, and I didn't hear anything. Until today. Command line tools for Xcode. Today, Apple added a beautiful new package to the official developers tools suite. Command line tools for Xcode. It's a 171 megabyte download that includes all of the tools a homebrew should ever need. Best of all, it contains the proprietary headers that I couldn't ship myself. And so on and so forth. Basically, the command line tools that he's talking about are exactly the same command line tools that you can download over the download section of Xcode 4.3. So now we know why it took so long for Apple to respond. Basically, they got the information from the developer community. We want the command line tools just by itself. And so they caught two birds with one stone. One, they repackaged Xcode and left out what you don't need anymore. But at the same time, they made this nice package for somebody who doesn't need the Xcode IDE with just the command line tools and all you need for building stuff. The future. This is an incredible day for the homebrew community. You can now set up a complete OS X development environment with a single 171 megabyte package download. It's official, it's legal, it'll be maintained. Homebrew is going to officially support the package too. So that's the story that I like. If something finds enough interest in the community, then Apple will hear about this, and that's probably much more efficient than filing radars upon radars. If something is kind of that much of a hit, then Apple will Sherlock it, sort of. But if it's an open source project that gets kind of folded into what Apple officially supports and publishes, then that can only be a good thing, right? Okay, that's it for episode 25. That was quite a mouthful of news. Let me have your comments and feedback. What do you think about the new Xcode 4.3? What do you think about what we can publicly discuss about Mountain Goat? My Twitter handle is @coconetics. You can also email me at oliver@coconetics.com. Have a nice weekend, and let's get coding again on Monday.